Good morning, everyone. We're going to get started with Senate Judiciary. Call it to order. As y'all know, we've been working off of a extended list of bills that we are waiting for various components, either amendments, fiscals, or a few other things. So at this point, what we're going to do is we're going to try to work through the agenda, and I'm going to try to, if we have all the paperwork, move it in the direction that it needs to go, depending on which bills they are. So starting with Senate Bill 215, if you're here on Senate Bill 215, that bill will not be moving forward. In other words, it is dead. Senate Bill 393, we're going to go ahead and open up at this point. Council, do we actually need to open up a public hearing on 393?
Do we have to?
All right, open up a public hearing on 393 as well as 394.
Committee, Senate Bill 393 and 394 are somewhat except in one respect. That 394 applies retroactively, makes a juvenile convicting adult court of certain serious felonies eligible for resentencing upon completion of one half the juvenile sentence.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 394 and 393 are identical except for one fact. In 394, it applies retroactively, makes a juvenile convicted in adult court of serious certain felonies eligible for resentencing upon completion of one half of the juvenile sentence.
All right, so what I'm going to do, it looks like we're going to have a couple of panels. It looks like some of the people are actually signed up for both, so you can give testimony on both at the same time. That's why we've opened up the public hearing on both 393, 394. So the first panel I'm going to call up will be Ken Steckler, Will Merkin, Merkel, and Shannon White. And for those who have not been before the committee, if you have written testimony, please hand it in. Please do not read your testimony. We will have it as part of the record. What I would like for you to do is summarize your high points, summarize them to make sure we catch the essence of it. And we will start off, go through the panel, and then we'll take questions afterwards. All right, who would like to get started? Volunteers.
I'll start.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. My name is Ken Steckler. I happen to be the father of a convicted youth under Match 11. I've submitted my testimony and several emails with some studies done by the Oregon Justice Commission and a video of Senate testimony back east on youth conviction and how one size fits all incarceration can actually be harmful, and the study shows the recidivism rates go up considerably when youth and offenders are sentenced under one size fits all. I'll just give you a quick highlight. My son, who was convicted 3 years ago, is at his halfway point currently. Was convicted when he was 17, entered the youth correctional facility, has completed high school, is currently enrolled in online college at Chemeketa. Will complete his business degree with a grade point average of 3.9 in June. Has a very strong support system, family, community members, church, previous employers that are willing to have him back as soon as he's done. The one thing that I wanted to bring forth was the he basically has no chance to, at this point, to continue his growth. He's completed all his state-mandated treatment, drug, alcohol, anger management, all those things, continues to go to school. It's becoming much more difficult to do online school to get a bachelor's degree without actually attending. Has glowing reports from all the staff and counselors and things. That, and I'm not saying he is the kid that's every youth offender, but there currently is no provision for those who seem to have learned their lesson or gotten the message that basically crime doesn't pay, never been in trouble before. And I'm just asking you to support this so that those who do get the message and have changed their life and attitudes can become come before a judge and under certain criteria be judged by that criteria and see how they're doing and be given a chance. And that would be my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Let's see, Will, would you like to go next?
Good morning. My name is Will Merkel. I'm an Oregon attorney and have been for 32 years. I think I bring a somewhat unique perspective on the operation of a Measure 11 and its impact on a juvenile sentenced under it. The committee should be aware that the way that Measure 11 works is that prosecution has charging decisions, and essentially in making charging decisions, they make sentencing decisions. And the question is whether they're equipped to deal with the sentencing needs of juvenile offenders. My suggestion to the committee is that this legislation would deal with that issue, because deputy district attorneys generally are rewarded for conviction rates but don't have the experience or tools necessary to craft an efficient sentence, yet are charged with obtaining convictions. Deputy district attorneys rarely have the background information that might be available to a judge or other neutral panel, such as a pre-sentencing decision or background investigation, before they make charging decisions, which ultimately turn out to be sentencing decisions. Measure 11 sentencing provisions don't really account for juvenile offenders' brain development and psychology needs. And I think this measure would account for those few in the system that don't belong there. I think it would save the state some money in allowing early release of offenders who have proven that they have achieved the three goals of the correction system. That is, they've been punished adequately, they have been corrected, and their lives have taken a different path. And thirdly, that they are no longer a danger to the public. And so I'd ask for this bill to be considered, because I believe it's valuable, a valuable tool to be used in grading on a case-by-case basis those juveniles who were lumped into capture under Measure 11.
All right. Thank you. Shannon.
My name is Shannon White. I'm the Associate Director with Partnership for Safety and Justice. We are a statewide membership organization that advocates for smart public safety policy, which for us means advocating for policies that impact both victims of crime and people who have convicted crimes, and we are here in support of Senate Bills 393 and 394. Chair Posonski, members of the committee, I was under the impression that actually this bill was not going to have live testimony today, and have actually alerted about a half a dozen folks who were planning on coming today to not come in person. So I am wondering if there is an opportunity, possibly at least for me to give them an opportunity to come back tomorrow and provide that testimony, or I don't know what the alternative is. I guess I could at least try to mention who those people are and their perspectives, although that's probably a stretch. But I'm not sure quite how to handle the fact that I at least had some information that there wouldn't be testimony today, and several people wanted to come before the committee.
All right. I apologize for any confusion regarding the public hearings that are set today. The bills themselves are, let's say, in positions that need to have public hearings before we would do any type of work session. We're having it now. I would tell you or anyone else who may have individuals who want to give testimony on any of the bills that are set for public hearing today, if we get through the public hearing today, they can always submit something in writing if they choose to. Some of these bills that we have set for public hearing are more than likely heading to other committees for other reasons. All right. Any questions for anyone on the panel? Thank you very much for coming forward. Our next panel is going to be Doug Quirkwood, Steve Dahl, and Walt Bigall.
You want to go? I'll go first.
chairs, members of the committee, my name is Doug Harkleroad. I'm the retired Lane County District Attorney, and I represent the Oregon Anti-Crime Alliance. I know you're busy. I will be quick. The Oregon Anti-Crime Alliance opposes Senate Bill 393 and 394 in the form that they're in. I looked at, just to be clear, both of these bills are retroactive, is the way I see it, in the language. And on page 7 of 393, it says, crimes committed before, on, or after the effective date. And in Senate Bill 394, on page 7, line 12 and 13, it says, apply to crimes committed before, on, or after the effective date of this 2011 Act. So I believe that they both are retroactive.
Could you, on that first one, on 393, give me the site on the bill?
Oh, yes, on 393, it's page 7, it's line 12 and 13. Line 12 and 13.
Thank you.
And you got it for yep. 394. So I believe the language is identical there.
Yeah, I would say they've been flagged for me as 393 was intended, if it's not, to be prospective, with 394 being retro. So...
Okay, I believe that's not the way it reads as I looked at it. So I wanted you to be clear on that. The only difference I actually saw in the two bills was that 393 does not apply to murder cases. That's line 15, page 1. And 394 does apply to murder cases. So I racked my brain to say, what's the benefit to public safety here? And I don't get the benefit to public safety. I get the benefit for cost and saving a lot of money. My experience, by the way, as the Lane County District Attorney was different than the distinguished lawyer who spoke a little earlier. And when we started dealing with Measure 11 cases with 15, 16, and 17-year-olds, we made sure that those people went to the juvenile department and we screened them very carefully before we charged them with those crimes. And after 2 years, 56% of the children are young people, however you want to describe them, in Lane County did not get charged with Measure 11 crimes, although they had been arrested for that. I believe DAs are screening very carefully. Okay, so there's a series of retroactive problems with both of these bills. You have to have a resentencing. And we all get that. There's a significant trauma to victims when they have to be brought back to court. And I have been unable to get over how to fix that in these bills. There's also a workload increase for the DAs, the courts, and the Indigent Defense Fund. And I don't know if you have a fiscal on it yet, but there is certainly a workload to do these hearings. The retroactive provision makes it... pretty much intolerable from my viewpoint. I'll quit there.
Wants to go next.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
It's a hard for a prosecutor to go second. They always want to go last.
I'll go wherever you want me to.
No, I think I got it worked out. Thanks, Walt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Walt Beglaw. I'm the Marion County District Attorney, and I'm also president of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. I can assure the committee that the district attorneys across Oregon have worked very hard to work with sentencing around youth and tailoring that to the individual youth, not only Measure 11, but those that are either waived or not waived and worked with within our juvenile departments. My greatest concern here is the impact to the victims. There's really what we're looking for is certainty up front for families impacted by Measure 11 sentences, particularly with youth. That lack of transparency in sentencing is a top priority to the Oregon District Attorneys Association in all sentencing, including that which we do with youth. My experience with Second Look is it's extremely challenging. In the many cases that I did on Second Look, we often called them Fourth and Fifth Look because we were coming back to court repeatedly, utilizing resources through that process, and it was very, very difficult. And I'm not sure we delivered a lot, ultimately. And so that would be one of my concerns. So that being said, I think any kind of substantive change like this in sentencing, particularly with youth, where we want to spend some time taking an earnest look what we're doing with kids is best suited for a more comprehensive look in an interim session, and of course the DA's association is more than willing to do that. So thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Dole. I'm president of Crime Victims United. We're a victims advocacy group that's statewide. We were founded in 1982, and we're one of the longest, proud to be one of the longest standing victims groups in the state of Oregon. I gave you a handout today of which I hope you take the time at some point. I know you're all very busy, but to read particularly the footnotes, but I give it to you for your information, but I want to refer to a couple of pages in it that are on point to this bill. We're opposed to the bill, and we're opposed to it because of the anxiety and the trauma that it brings to victims. As Mr. Beglau said, with Measure 11, you have certainty in sentencing. You have truth in sentencing. And if you look at page 2 of this handout, you'll see that something that's forgotten in Measure 11 is that this body made many changes to Measure 11, in fact, 3 to be exact, over the years, that have to do with giving judges discretion in all second-degree Measure 11 crimes. And in 2007, I asked the Criminal Justice Commission to study this, and they said that at the time, almost 57% of all youth were getting this treatment, in which they got sentences below Measure 11 because of the use of Senate Bills 1049 and House Bill 2397 to include probation. So that's actually better than second look. That's better than second look. In the case of first degree crimes, again, the anxiety and the trauma that it would bring to victims who have a murder victim in their family or are victims of first degree rape crimes, I think would be harmful to victims and harmful to public safety. And last but not least, I'd ask you to look at pages, the last two pages of the handouts. It goes against the will of the Oregon voter. They voted twice on this, the first time by 66%, and the second time when Measure 11, there was a repeal attempt, almost 75% of Oregon voters said no. So I thank you very much for your time.
All right, thank you. Questions for anyone on the panel? Senator Westhead.
Thank you. Just, you know, if you could just kind of give me and maybe the panel a brief idea, Ms. Bigelow, of the types of crimes that we're talking about here that were committed by a youth and then subsequently prosecuted as an adult.
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsett, that was subsequently prosecuted by what? I'm sorry.
As an adult? Under Measure 11.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsett, these the cases that are worked are like rape one, sodomy one. They were mostly sex offenses. We had some of the property, violent property crimes, the robbery. Those were some of those, most of the cases we were seeing.
Thank you.
All right, any other questions or comments? Gentlemen, thank you very much. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bills 393 and 394. And we're going to open up our next public hearing on Senate Bill 432.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 432, the amendments replace the bill, requires a court when calculating the maximum time a person may be committed to aid and assist proceedings from when the defendant is first committed, and to give the defendant credit against each charge alleged in the accusatory instrument. I believe Bob Jundiff is here to testify on behalf of the amendment, and I believe Naomi. I saw Bob Jundiff in here a second ago.
Yeah. Hopefully Bob's around, and I got Laura Smith. Going once. Going twice. Bob? I don't know if I'd say perfect timing, but you're here.
As if by magic. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bob Jundiff. I'm out of breath coming up the stairs from the very comfortable couch in the overflow area. I'm the Director of Disability Rights of Oregon, and I'm here to speak in favor of the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 432. These amendments have to do with the circumstance in which people who have been found have been found unable to aid and assist when facing a criminal charge or sent to the state hospital. Under our state laws as they exist, when that occurs, the hospital is supposed to treat that individual until they're fit to face their criminal charges. They're supposed to make an evaluation as to whether the person can be restored to competency. If the person, in their estimation, cannot be restored to competency, say due to a brain injury or intellectual disability, they are supposed to inform the court at that time, and the person is then supposed to be moved from that status of treatment in the hospital into another status, and that could be civil commitment, it could be release under certain conditions, and the criminal procedure is held in abeyance. For those who can be treated, there is a maximum of 3 years that the state has to return the person to capacity, and that three-year standard comes from a Supreme Court decision in Jackson versus Indiana, which stated that if the government is holding a person in custody in order to restore them to competency, that period of being held cannot be indefinite. There must be some outer limit to how long the state has to restore the person. Those are the basic sideboards here. So there are circumstances in which a person is sent to the hospital for restorative treatment. In the hospital's estimation, they are restored and they are sent back to jail in order to resolve their criminal matter. However, while they're back in jail, they decompensate and end up being determined unable to assist again and are returned to the hospital. This can happen multiple times. These are rare cases, but they do occur. In those cases, the hospital has interpreted the three-year maximum period to begin each new time the person comes to the hospital. And so in those cases, a person can essentially end up in an indefinite holding pattern in which they come to the hospital, they spend some time, are restored, they go back to jail, they then decompensate, go back to the hospital, and so forth and so on. And so the three-year limit in those particular cases can be meaningless. The Dash 1 Amendments attempts to clarify that in these matters, for a criminal charge, that the person is, due to some sort of mental disorder, unable to face their charges, that the state has 3 years maximum to return them to capacity, and if they're unable to do so within that time, then the person moves to that other status that I mentioned earlier of either civil commitment or some other disposition. And the criminal case is, in those circumstances, is generally dismissed without prejudice so that the person is able to face charges in the future. Those criminal charges can be reinstituted and litigated.
All right, thank you. Before we take testimonies, I understand, I'm going to see if Laura Smith's here. All right, Mark Nystrom, why don't you come on up and give your testimony now, then we'll open up for discussion.
Chair Pozanski, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nystrom. I represent the Association of Oregon Counties. Last fall, the Association of Oregon Counties brought together members of the human services and public safety world and had a task force to discuss the building of the second state hospital. During this time, we discussed Disability Rights Oregon's amendment to limit the number of years that a person can be held with aid and assist to 3 years, and that was one of our recommendations, was to support that, and so AOC does support this amendment.
Thank you for coming forward. Any questions for either gentleman? Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming forward today. We're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on 432. And open up work session on Senate Bill 868.
Chairman, the committee, Senate Bill 868 clarifies that RS 13700, that the imposition of mandatory minimum sentence for Measure 11 crimes applies to those who are at least 18 years after the time the offense was committed. The chair, members of the committee, this is to address an issue in State versus Gundines, where a person committed a crime when they were under age 15, and they were not the crime was not discovered until the person was an adult, and they were charged under Measure 11, even though at the time they committed the crime, Measure 11 did not apply to them.
All right. Thank you. I have two people who want to testify. The way it's the sign-up says Bronson James. So I don't know if it's Bronson James or James Bronson, but whoever, please come forward. And Walt Bigelaw. So we're, just to make certain I'm on the record on this, this is a public hearing on Senate Bill 868. Gentlemen, come on forward.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bronson James. I'm an attorney out of Portland. The Senate Bill 868 is a response to a case that I handled that came up through the Court of Appeals last year. It's called State versus Jose Godinez. And the Godinez case exposed a gap in the statutory sentencing language. The way ballot measure 11 works in conjunction with juvenile offenders is such that ballot measure 11 is intended to apply to offenders that were 15 or above at the time they committed their crime. And a individual who's 12 or less in Oregon has no criminal culpability under the criminal statutes. And then there's this gray area of 13 and 14-year-olds. And the way the statutory scheme works is if you are 13 or 14, the juvenile court maintains jurisdiction over you but has the authority to waive you into adult court, and you can be prosecuted as an adult. However, there is a statutory limit that says if you are waived into adult court when you are 13 or 14, ballot measure 11 cannot apply to you. However, where this gap came, where we realized this gap in the Court of Appeals opinion, is cases where the individual was 13 or 14 when they committed the crime, but the prosecution did not commence until they were an adult. In the case of Mr. Godinez, it commenced when he was 20. When the prosecution commences when you're an adult, there is no initial jurisdiction by the juvenile court. There is no waiver into adult court. And so according to the Court of Appeals, this statutory limit is never triggered. And as a result, what we have is a situation where if you are 13 or 14 when you committed the crime, and the system works as it's supposed to do in that it timely adjudicates that matter, there is a bar to the prohibition of Measure 11 sentences. If, however, there is a breakdown in the system and the adjudication does not happen until after the individual is 18, then we are imposing ballot Measure 11 sentences on people who, for acts that were committed by a 13 and 14-year-old. I think, I don't want to speak for my colleague here, but I think the general consensus is that we need a bill that clarifies the statutory language. The Court of Appeals, in the Godinez opinion, basically kind of threw up their hands and said, we can't tell what the legislative intent was. We need a bill that clarifies that and closes this loophole. We think the bill, as it's currently written, probably doesn't do it, and so we think it needs a modification, but I think everybody's on board with the notion that we just need to get the right language, and we do need a bill.
Walt?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Walt Beglaw. I'm the Marion County District Attorney and President of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. In its current form, we are opposed to Senate Bill 868. Bottom line is, Measure 11 does not apply to 13, 14-year-olds or younger, and should not. And this is a pretty slim loophole. We can close this, but the current language opens the door to, at a minimum, lack of clarity for the court of sentencing provisions for Measure 11 offenders who are 15, 16, and 17, and if you look at it just on its face, prevents a Measure 11 sentence potentially for a 15, 16, and 17-year-old. That is, we're opposed to that concept. We need clarity around it, and we're more than willing to look at this and craft some language that that narrowly defines this issue.
All right, thank you. So this is Chair's request.
you two get that language together, work with council today, like meaning as soon as he clears the dais, so we can get the language, see if we can't get it in. That will allow it to go into the bill tomorrow, and then we can move the bill to a committee so it can move forward. But I don't feel comfortable moving the bill as it's currently written based on the statements from both parties.
All right.
Any questions for the gentleman? Thank you all very much, and I look forward to you working together in haste.
Thank you, Dan.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 868. We're opening up our last, I believe, public hearing for today on Senate Bill 875.
Chair, members of the committee, this bill includes assistant attorney generals among those state employees who cannot strike.
All right, I have two individuals that are scheduled to testify, Mark Abrams and Joe Bessler. Please come forward.
Good morning, Chair Pazinski, members of the committee. I'm Mark Abrams. I'm president of AFSCME Local 1085, the Oregon Association of Justice Attorneys. I represent 235 attorneys at the Oregon Department of Justice, and we're here today to ask for your support for Senate Bill 875. When this legislature initiated PECBA, the Public Employee Collective Bargaining Act, it set a series of balances for different groups within state government. One of those balances was to give to groups such as my union the right to strike. However, as a practical matter, the right to strike is fundamentally unavailable to assistant attorneys general. We do have a bar opinion that allows us to do so, and it is attached to the copy of the testimony we have submitted to you today. But to give you a sense of it, some of our members have as many as 100 cases on their desk. If it were to come to a strike, not that that has ever happened in our bargaining unit, pragmatically, you can't make arrangements with 100 different opposing counsel, with 30 or 40 different judges. You can't live up to your ethical obligation to your clients, the citizens of this state, the agencies of the state, frequently this legislature, to make sure that their interests are not fairly protected. So, as a result, we looked at the statute that we're asking you to amend and said we really are very much like deputy district attorneys, which this legislature added in 2009. We're like firefighters. Over half of the assistant attorneys general either are directly involved in prosecutorial activities, either assisting district attorneys around the state, handling their appeals, or are providing advice and counsel on a daily basis to the Department of Corrections or the Oregon State Police. Even myself, I'm an employment lawyer, Mr. Chairman, and then 2 years ago I ended up co-prosecuting a case involving the trespassers here on the Capitol steps. So even those of us who are nominally not in that area end up performing prosecutorial and public safety functions from time to time. So basically, because we believe that our obligations to the citizens of the state and to the agencies of the state government are more important than our right to strike, we ask that we be put into the statutes as these other public safety agents, entities are, so that we may still have the kind of balance to have fair and equitable public bargaining as is envisioned by PECBA, and we ask for your support for Senate Bill 875.
All right, thank you. Joe, do you have anything to add?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't actually. Mr. Abrams was covered it very, very well.
All right, thank you very much. Any questions for Mark? Senator Wissa.
Thank you. This would have an effect on collective bargaining, I believe. Would this, in effect, if the bill were enacted, would it make your collective bargaining subject to mandatory arbitration?
That isn't the intent, Senator, yes, because right now
that's
we'd like that. Yes.
All right, any other questions? All right, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I don't believe there's anyone else who was signed up to testify on 875. I'll look to see if anyone wants to come forward. Don't see anyone coming forward. We'll close the public hearing on 875. All right, so what we're going to do first is looking at the bills that we just had public hearings on. These bills will be carried over until tomorrow,
Thursday, April 21st. I am carrying over Senate Bill 393, Senate Bill 394. We're at the top. 393, 394 are being carried over. 432, 868, and 875. Again, those five bills are being carried over until tomorrow, April 21st. For work session only. All right, anyone need any more notes on those? All right, so we're now going to start our work sessions that we have scheduled for today. We're starting at the top of the list, Senate Bill 369. Work session is open.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 369 has the dash two amendments to it. This creates a death penalty review panel, and the amendment would reduce that to one judge. It directs the Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court to appoint a judge with experience in death penalty matters. Judge will review aggravated murder cases in which a sentence of death is imposed for the purpose of determining if a settlement conference would be beneficial. It requires the panel to review when a petition for habeas corpus is filed, petition for post-conviction relief has been filed, court conducted appellate review of either habeas corpus or post-conviction petition cases sent back to trial court. Effective upon passage, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the dash two amendments also require that a district attorney to file notice to seek sentence death no later than 180 days after the defendant is charged with aggravated murder except for good cause. In no event may the notice be filed less than 90 days before trial. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that provision, the notice provision, is similar to what they have up in the state of Washington. You may have heard, remember the testimony we had on this bill and when we had a hearing of the bill on April 4th.
All righty, and let's see, so we need the dash twos adopted, and we have the other paperwork.
Chair, members of the committee, we're still waiting on the fiscal.
All right, we'll take a motion on the dash twos.
Mr. Chair, the fiscal impact we got was on, oh, that's a different bill. Never mind.
Okay. I just checked.
Mr. Chair, we're considering the dash twos, not the dash ones.
That's my understanding, it's just the dash
that's
twos.
That's correct.
Okay, so you just want to move the twos?
Yes, please.
Okay, I move the dash two amendment, Senate Bill 369.
Senator Cruz moves the dash two amendments into Senate Bill 369. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. All right, we're going to be closing the work session on 369 since we do not have all the paperwork. 369 will be carried over until tomorrow, April 21st. Consideration, it will be carried over again for a work session.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Just a quick question. I'm assuming this has to go to Ways and Means since it's got a blank. Did you say
It will be going there. No, I had not said that because I was waiting to see if we had all the paperwork. But yes, the intent will be to move this bill to Ways and Means. And if necessary, we'll take care of that tomorrow. But I'm going to see if the fiscals can catch up with it.
Great. Thank you.
All right, so we're closing the work session on 369. We're now opening up a work session on 395.
Mr. Chair, members of committee, 395 comes from the Senate Judiciary Committee, clarifies that felony driving under the influence as described in RS 813-010 subsection 5 is a Category 6 in the sentencing guidelines, which carries a presumptive sentence of 12 to 14 months. Mr. Chairman of the committee, you should have the dash one amendments in front of you that allows the state to reimburse the counties for incarcerating those charged with and convicted of driving under the influence for a third time. Mr. Chairman of the committee, this bill, in an indirect way, what it does is it addresses I don't know how to describe it. I don't think the intent of 73 was to require a minimum sentence of 13 to 14 months, presumptive sentence for repeat conviction, but a 90 days in jail. And if I remember correctly, there was a letter sent by Mr. Mannix to the Senate President to that effect. This bill has, as amended, would have significant fiscal impact.
All right.
And without the amendments, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there's no way to pay counties right now. Even though it authorized the counties to be paid, it did not direct an agency, nor did it set forth a budget item in it.
Okay. And do we have amendments on this one at this point?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have the dash one amendment. At least I have it.
All right.
And besides the back window, are we looking for, waiting for any additional amendments?
Chair, members of the committee, no, we're not waiting for any additional amendments. The last time I checked, I believe that the fiscal has been requested in this bill. We do not have it yet. But it's obvious it will be a positive fiscal.
Okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, very positive, and because it allows the department to decide how the grants will be awarded, potentially it could be come in as an unfunded mandate.
All right. So at this point, Council, we need the dash ones.
We've got the dash ones.
Yeah, but I mean, we need to adopt them.
We need to, well, if you want, yes. Most assuredly, at least it sets.
Or do you want to wait until tomorrow?
Mr. Chair, member, I think you can adopt the amendments right now unless people have concerns with the way they're drafted, but it sets a process and procedure for paying the counties for the, as the initiative requires the state to pay for the incarceration in jail for those convicted of the driving under the, within the purview of the initiative.
All right, so let me just say where we're at on this from the chair's perspective. It sounds like we do need the dash ones. I have been given a memorandum that at this point the bill should be referred to rules. I do expect that it is going to end up in Ways and Means, but I think what I'd like to do is go ahead and get the amendments adopted. Since we don't have the fiscal, we'll carry this one over until tomorrow. We can clean it up with the others.
Okay, yeah, Mr. Chair, the dash one is certainly better than the original bill. Still problematic, but I will move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 395.
All right, Senator Cruz moves the dash one amendment into Senate Bill 395. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And with that, we will be carrying over Senate Bill 395 until tomorrow, April 21st, for additional work session. With that, I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on 395, open a work session on Senate Bill 416.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 416 allows certain people who would otherwise go to prison for repeat property offenses to be diverted into community corrections. You have the dash two amendments in front of you. This is a product of a work group consisting of Doug Hawker, Rod Ross Shepherd, the representatives of the sheriffs and the defense bar. It's intended to deal with people in many cases who are drug offenders, who are involved in property crime or minor drug crime. Mr. Chairman of the committee.
All right.
You have the dash two amendments in front of you.
Dash two.
Yes, the dash two. 416-2. It was dated 4/19/11. Okay. I got them.
Okay, I had them bundled up.
Late yesterday. 416-2. I know Doug Hawker Road is here to address him if you'd like, and I believe so was Ross Shepherd. They were instrumental in bringing the bill and been very helpful in the work group process that we have had.
Yeah, I don't think we need to have any testimony or anything else. It seems to me everyone's fine with this. So why don't we go ahead and see if we can move the dash twos.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendment to Senate Bill 416.
Senator Cruz moves the dash two amendments in the Senate Bill 416. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And if Council, is it ready to...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what we have is called a fiscal light
right.
in the sense that it's been...
Right. And the reason we have a fiscal light is because it has a subsequent or referral to Ways and Means, and it's my understanding that is an appropriate means of handling the fiscal, knowing it's going to Ways and Means. So, Senator Cruz, yeah. If you're comfortable...
It does not have a prior referral.
Well, what we'll it says right here.
But it Marked. Does not. Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 416 as amended by the dash two amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation and request a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
All right. Just to cover ourselves, we at least the agenda says it has a subsequent referral. Council says he can't see it in his folder.
Mr. Chair, so that's why my motion said request.
I know, and that's okay. Why I'm putting it on the record.
Okay, okay.
And so because of that, we have a motion before us from Senator Cruz that moves Senate Bill 416 as amended by the dash twos to the floor with a due pass recommendation and requesting that the President's office consider a subsequent referral of this bill to Ways and Means. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
All right, so we got one off the list there.
Already?
Wow.
I think it's two now.
Oh, yeah.
We're burning through this. Close the work session on 4/16. Open the work session on 4/20.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is a bill that the amendment will be the bill. It relates to the issue of transferring to the Oregon Health Authority the decision when a person should be released from the hospital back into the community. PSRB, when they are in the community, would then be responsible for supervision and other factors in the community. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there's a dash 2 set of amendments coming, a refinement of the dash 1. I will not have those amendments until tonight.
All right, so chair is moving, not moving, but is actually going to move Senate Bill 420 and carry it over until tomorrow, 421, waiting for the amendments that are supposed to be in tonight. So we'll close the work session on 420. Open. All right, and let's see. The next one is Senate Bill 677. 677 is now dead. It is not leaving the committee. We are now moving into a work session on Senate Bill 678.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 678 comes to you from the committee, and what it addresses is the issue commonly referred to as sexting. It creates a new crime, a misdemeanor crime, for those people who do it, and it exempts, creates an affirmative defense for those who are juveniles who do it, and this also applies to people who are the age of, within 3 years of the person they took the picture of or the picture they received from. It allows, in certain circumstances, the judge greater discretion also in determining whether to treat them under a 70-month sentence of displaying sexually explicit conduct or not.
All right. And do we have any amendments?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we do not have any amendments.
And do we have the paperwork?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm surprised if we did. 378, fiscal requested. No amendments, fiscal requested.
All right, so we're going to carry over 378, and just for the committee, the, excuse me, 678, the intent on 678 is to move the bill to rules tomorrow based on, request and authorization that has come from the President's office. So we'll go ahead and close. Senate Bill, get back up to it, 678, realizing again that we're carrying this one over until tomorrow for 421. We're now opening up a work session on Senate Bill 729.
Chairman, the Committee of Senate 729 comes to you from the Judiciary Committee, removes the Sunper provision in Section 21 of House Bill 3508, which allows a reduction in the period of active probation supervision. Applies to crimes committed after July 1, 2011. It's effective upon passage, Mr. Chairman.
All right. So do we have any amendments or anything at this point?
Chair, members of the committee, you should have the dash 1 amendments in front of you. They replace the bill, sets a policy of encouraging community corrections agencies to focus staff resources and sanctions on the offender who need the most monitoring. It allows the active period of supervision to reduce up to 50% by good behavior, if I remember correctly. These are recommendations from the Community Corrections Director.
All right. And so we need the dash ones to be adopted?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think the Community Corrections Directors would probably make it better policy.
All right. Let's take a motion on the dash ones.
Mr. Chairman, the dash one, the Senate Bill 729.
Senator Cruz moves the dash one amendments into Senate Bill 729. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And council, is that one ready to move?
Mr. Chair, no. Fiscal has been requested as in the next one, Senate 730.
Mr. Chair, that confuses me because the SMS says no fiscal impact, but we don't have a statement. How can that possibly be?
Because I probably hit the wrong button.
Okay.
Up top.
Okay.
All right. So we're carrying over Senate Bill 729 until tomorrow. Which will be April 21st. Close the work session on 729. Open the work session on 730.
Chair, Chair, members of the committee, there are no amendments to this bill. 730 continues a limitation of 60 days that a court can impose in sanctions on the person who receives a sentence of presumptive probation has violated the conditions of that probation unless the person was convicted of a new crime. Applies to crimes committed after July 1, 2011.
All right, and did you say we do need fiscal still on this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we do.
All right, so we're going to be carrying over 730, Senate Bill 730, until tomorrow, April 21st, and close the work session on that bill, 730. And just for a point of reference, both 729 and 730, it will be the intent of the chair to move those two bills to Ways and Means tomorrow. All right, moving into our next work session, Senate Bill 961.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 961, you may remember we have the Dash 1 amendments to the bill. This voids construction agreements provisions that require a party in the agreement to waive the rights to seek indemnity, contribution, or reimbursement damage due to negligence of another party. You may remember the testimony that Senator Morris gave and others concerning that the general contractors were requiring subs to indemnify the general contractor for the general contractor's liability. We have the Dash 1 amendments. Fiscals in progress.
All right. I've got a note that it appears that 961 fiscals could get here today, but since we're rolling through this, we're going to just stay. Looks like we got it. All right. It looks like that came in.
It just came in.
Oh, yep. On top.
Do we have an amendment for this?
There should be a Dash 1.
Yes.
And that was, I think, early on.
Right.
That came forward. They were working on a Dash 2s, and I believe they decided, due to the lateness in the hour, to go with the Dash 1s.
Okay.
All right. Is everyone comfortable with the paperwork?
Do you know if the Dash 1 is a consensus agreement? Because my notes talked about the Oregon Bar, at least on the original bill. So was the Dash 1 the effort of working with the Oregon Bar?
I do not know. Is there anyone here on 961 that can answer the question Senator Dingfelder has put forward? What we're going to do is we'll be carrying over Senate Bill 961 until tomorrow so we can get answers to that question. Wait, before I hit the gavel.
Mr. Chair, two things. First off, if I remember correctly, after the meeting, Senator Morris convened a work group with the interested parties. Dave Hendricks participated in it. My assumption is the Oregon State Bar did too. The Dash 1, I believe, are a product of that work group.
And I appreciate that, so we'll get clarification on that before tomorrow. And this is make sure, because I have a member that's got some questions and we have the time to still get the answer. All right? Anything else that we need to put on the record? All right, we're going to go ahead and close Senate Bill 961 with the intention of moving the Dash 1s tomorrow, so we are carrying that bill over to 421. Now we're opening up a work session on Senate Bill 963.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 963 modifies Oregon law relating to transfer of structured settlements. You have the Dash 1 amendments in front of you, and we actually have the fiscal on this, which is
amazing.
All right, so what I need, please, is a motion on the Dash 1s.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 963.
All right, Senator Cruz moves the Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bill 963. Any discussion?
Can somebody please explain the Dash 1 amendments to
Council? Mr. Chair, members
of the
committee, I can read the Dash 1 on page 3 after line 25 and insert that the transfer payment rights is approved by the court or responsible administrative authority. The transferee may deduct the fee paid by the transferee under the section for the amount to be paid by the transferee to the payee.
Okay.
I think that's English.
I
basically think it means that the person making the transfer, if it costs them money, can collect it.
I think I was looking for more. Whose amendments are they?
Chairman, I believe they came from a proponent of the bill.
I believe that's correct. I think Mr. Cosgrove actually gave testimony as to what the impact or ramifications of what the Dash 1s could be, if I'm not mistaken. Not. Paul, come on up.
Good Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul Cosgrove for the National Association of Settlement Purchasers. The dash ones came from Representative Holvey's office.
That's what we understand.
I hadn't seen them at the time of the last hearing. I've now looked at them, and I think I understand what they do, but we weren't proposing or the dash ones.
I was not intending to say that you proposed them, but I thought you'd give them comment as to the ramifications of what they would do, but someone else did.
I can now that I've looked at them. I think what they do is that the amount that is negotiated for the payment of the purchase of the structured settlement then is adjusted by the amount, if any, that the structured settlement buyer has paid in the seller for the seller's attorney's fees.
All right, understand. All right. We have a motion now on the dash ones, if I'm not mistaken, before us. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. All right. This is where we're at on 963. We will be carrying that bill over until tomorrow, 421. It has been amended with the dash ones. All right. We're now going to close that work session on Senate Bill 963. Open the work session on 608. And Cheyenne, I think you're now up, or is this Aaron's? Oh, this is Drew's. Who is?
Which one?
608.
Okay.
And Drew is out ill. I just got an email. And it basically says that Senate Bill 608 can be voted out. Does council have the 608 here? Could we do this?
Chair, members of the committee, I don't have the hard file.
I understand. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 608. And I'm going to ask staff if you can get one of the other attorneys to come back with the 608 since it's ready to move, and we'll see if we can get that on the record, and we'll come back to that before we end today.
We haven't adopted the force or anything yet.
I don't believe we have, right. So I want to make sure we're all...
And it goes to Ways and Means, so...
That's correct. It has a subsequent. So, all right. So we've closed the work session on 608 with the understanding that we will be coming back to it today once we get the attorney with the folder in front of us. So I will go ahead and open up a work session on Senate Bill 819.
Chair, this is also Mr. Johnson's.
And we will also see on that one there. The note wasn't sure what the situation is, so. All right, and Aaron, I think the other one that we're going to need is 819, which is the other one that Drew was carrying. So if we can bring that in, let's not worry about that now. We'll work through it. We'll come back to those. All right, so I'm carrying over 819. We will revisit those before we end today. All right, with that said, we're now going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 186. And the purpose for opening up the work session on 186 is to carry this one over until tomorrow, April 21st. And with that, I propose the work session on Senate Bill 186. All right, so now I'm going to go ahead and open up the work session on Senate Bill 346.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 346 is previously heard on March the 24th, the 18th of April. It has both dash ones and dash twos ready. The dash ones reference criminal and civil discovery statutes. The dash twos provide a couple of alternatives for requesters who are seeking access to 911 audio recordings. The bill exempts audio recordings of the caller's voice from being disclosed under public records law unless public interest requires, but it provides unrestricted disclosure of a transcript of a call, and it creates certain exceptions for law enforcement, criminal defense purposes, and training purposes. The requester exceptions or alternatives under the Dash 2 Amendment are that they can sign a non-disclosure agreement and receive a copy of the tape, or they can listen to the tape and receive a transcript without a non-disclosure agreement. Neither of those amendments have been adopted into the measure.
All right. So the chair will entertain a motion on the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 346.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 346.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bill 346. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Regarding the Dash 2s.
Give me just a minute.
Yeah. You bet. What I can tell you regarding the Dash 2 is what the intent is to give the 911 centers two options. One is what was, I believe, proposed in the original bill, which was to allow for the requester to listen to the tape and then provide a transcript. I believe the Dash 2s require that transfer of turnaround time of 24 hours, or to have the tape given in its entirety to the requester, with the requester being required to sign a non-disclosure or non-transferability of the tape to another individual, and not to broadcast it in that sense.
Mr. Chair, can you talk a little bit about the civil penalty part of the Dash 2?
My understanding, the civil penalty is for those who violate, if they violate the non-disclosure order, they would be subject to a civil fine. Other questions?
Mr. Chair, do you know what the amount of the civil fine would be? Is it just a slap on the wrist, or is it a major fine?
I believe it's
$5,000. It's right in the Dash 2.
Pretty good whack.
Quite honestly, Mr. Chair, I'm looking to see if there's unintended consequences.
Let me tell you this. At this point, we're not moving the bill today. I don't think we have any fiscal.
Okay. Would it be okay with you if we waited and moved the twos after I've had a better chance to look at it?
That's fine with me. All right, so regarding Senate Bill 346, we have adopted the Dash 1 amendments. We are now going to go ahead and close the work session on 346 with the understanding that we will carry that bill over until tomorrow, April 21st.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, not that I'm opposing, I just need, it's a two-page amendment, I need just a little more time to look at the references.
I fully appreciate it. We have the time, and so I'm more than willing to accommodate to make certain everyone has that opportunity. And so I will now close the work session on 346, and we will open a work session on 378.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 308 is pending fiscal statements on the Dash 3.
So do we have the Dash 3s adopted already?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right, so we need to adopt the Dash 3s?
We haven't received testimony on the Dash 3s. Ms. Meyer is in the audience if the committee has any questions, but that's correct. They haven't been adopted into the minutes.
All right. The chair will entertain a motion on the Dash 3 amendments to 378.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendment 378.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 3 amendment into Senate Bill 378. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair,
yeah.
We're trying to find them.
I don't know if they have them.
So,
we can just
okay.
Many steps of paper.
Were they distributed yesterday?
No, were they distributed yesterday or today? They're not in my stack from yesterday. I have a very orderly stack by day.
Well,
so they're not, and they're in numerical order, so I don't see them.
If I recall correctly, they came in during the day to our office yesterday because fiscals were just requested.
All right, I understand we don't have the fiscal, but I also understand at least our colleagues over here have the Dash 3s.
I have a Dash 2.
Yeah, we have the Dash 2s, but not the Dash 3s.
There's a benefit to having paper.
Yeah.
We have both.
We have both.
Wow.
We didn't get that.
Then
if it
you
was
should have it twice.
To our office, we didn't get it.
They're making, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, they're making additional copies right now.
All right. We're going to stand at ease for a moment. All right, we're back on the record. I've asked for Gail Meyer and Elizabeth Cushwaugh to please come forward regarding the Dash 3s. It's my understanding that the parties have been working together trying to iron out dates that would be accommodating for the sides. And my understanding, the Dash 3s do reflect that. So if you can briefly tell us yes or no.
Thank you, members of the committee. Gail Meyer on behalf of the Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. The Dash 3s do represent the agreed language between OCDLA and the district attorneys, and we thank the district attorneys for their staying at the table with us.
Good morning, members of the committee. Chair Pozanski, Elizabeth Cushwaugh for the Oregon District Attorneys Association. These do, in fact, represent consensus. It's becoming a theme with us this year. It's pretty good. We're more than happy to approve the Dash 3s.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair will take a motion on the Dash 3s.
Mr. Chairman, the Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 378.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 3s into Senate Bill 378. Any additional discussion? Any objection? So ordered. We'll be carrying over 378 as amended by the Dash 3s until tomorrow, April 21st, understanding that we are waiting for the fiscal to come in on that particular bill. All right. Close the work session on 378. Open a work session on Senate Bill 408.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 408 is also pending fiscal statement on the Dash 3.
And do we need to go ahead and adopt the Dash 3s?
Dash 3s have not been adopted.
All right,
Mr.
It Chair, we'll take a motion.
Today or today? The Dash 3s did not come through. Is that today's Dash
3? The 18th is when they were released.
It would have been received by our office yesterday, I believe.
So they should have been released to you yesterday. Or today.
Our staff is listening and posting the
Okay, we're going to carry over Senate Bill 408 without adopting the Dash 3s at this point to give committee an opportunity to review those since it is a replacement of the bill. With that, we're going to go ahead and...
Mr. Chair, we are looking at the 3s.
That's correct, the Dash 3s. So we are going to carry over Senate Bill 408 until tomorrow, April 21st, with the intention of acting on the Dash 3s. All right, now we're on to Senate Bill 662. Open up the work session.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 616, there are two sets of amendments pending before the committee. First of all, the Dash 2s and the Dash 4s. This bill was previously heard on March 17th, briefly on the 18th of April and the 19th of April. As to the Dash 2s and the Dash 5s, there's no revenue impact and there's a minimal fiscal impact. This measure allows a court to include animals within the scope of a protective order issued pursuant to the Family Abuse Prevention Act. It declares an emergency as effective on passage. And both of the amendments narrow the applicability of the measure to pets rather than commercial animals. There was some disagreement about the language, but I understand it's either the Dash 2s or the Dash 4s that the committee is interested in today.
All right, and let me ask you regarding the fiscals on these. I understand we have the fiscal on the Dash 2. Have we received the fiscal on the Dash 4?
That's correct. They're both minimal. Dash 2s and Dash 4s are both minimal impact. No statement issued.
Either 4s. Yeah, based on what I last heard.
Okay.
I don't have 4s. I have everything but the 4s.
So we got all the paperwork. Well, I'm getting ready. All right. And, counsel, just a question came up. We do have the paperwork necessary to move the Dash 4s.
That's correct. The no revenue impact and the no statement for the fiscal.
All right. Taking a motion on the Dash 4s, please.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 616.
All right. Senator Cruz moves the Dash 4 amendments into Senate Bill 616. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 616 as amended by the Dash 4 amendments to the 403 pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 616 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as it was amended by the Dash 4s. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Let's see, Senator Dingfelder, you want to carry this
sure.
one?
Thank you.
Another one.
There we go, man. We're light speed here, one per page.
One per
hour. Boy, it's going to be a long night tomorrow. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 616. For now, Senate Bill 734 is not going to be moving forward. This is going to be one that will be moved into a interim work group. I've spoke with Senator Winters, who was the drafter of the bill. She has agreed to this disposition based on some, let's say, opposition that has come from the executive branch, and I have told her that we would work on this during the interim. So that bill is not coming back. Senate Bill, open a work session to Senate Bill 783. The purpose for that is to carry this one over until tomorrow, April 21st. I'm closing the work session on Senate Bill 783. Chair's got to catch up just like everyone else.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure we got the color code and everything else. All right, we're opening up a work session on Senate Bill 926.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 926, we received an amendment, and fiscal and revenue impact statements have been requested. The fiscal is still pending. This one has permission to be moved to rules, which doesn't require the necessary paperwork, depending on what the committee and the chair would like to do.
Okay, so what we're going to do, I'm just going to stay consistent with everything else that we've been doing on these. We will be carrying over Senate Bill 926 until tomorrow, April 21st.
Mr. Chair, I'm assuming we're looking at the dash one.
That's correct. That's consensus language, I understand, between the Bankers Association.
But we couldn't, I mean, we can go ahead and move the dash ones if we want to move the dash ones now.
That's.
Or do you want to wait?
Let's wait.
Okay.
But I'm
so, Council, make sure we know we need to still adopt on that one. So we're closing the work session on Senate Bill 926, and we're opening up a work session on 934. The purpose for opening up the work session is we're still waiting for fiscals on this. And so we will carry over 934 until tomorrow, April 21st. Closing that work session, we're now opening the work session on Senate Bill
69. Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 69A is back to us for a second time to address some concerns that were expressed on the floor. There is another amendment that has been advanced, and there's somebody here to speak to that amendment, Donna Dishon and Anita Phillips, and I recommend that we take the time to do so as the amendment completely replaces the bill. Particularly at issue were provisions having to do with what businesses are permitted to use fireworks to repel nuisance animals and also the fee structure. The dash two amendments, which have not been adopted, are projected to have a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
And it's my understanding we are still waiting for fiscals on that dash twos, or do we get those?
No, Senator, those are in.
Okay. Quickly, if you can give us your a brief summary of what the dash twos do.
Chair Prozanski, members of the committee, the dash two makes some changes to the overall bill, basically in housekeeping. It removes any appearance that there would be new language for fees.
Could you get your name on the record,
oh,
please?
Excuse me. My name is Donna Dish, and I'm with the Office of State Fire Marshal. Thank you. It removes any of the bold language for the existing fee language, and I think that was very confusing in the bill. But it also removes the housekeeping that we had in the bill, and it takes it back to the original existing statute. The other thing that we did is we added a military exemption, and that's been added to the bill. Other than that, those are the only changes. It continues to keep the definitions, and the definitions were very important to the industry because it aligns the language of the Oregon definitions in the statute with federal definitions that the fireworks industry has to follow. The other thing that stayed was the expansion to the agricultural licenses. It expanded it to golf associations in the golf industry, as well as the I'm drawing a blank here, and other small businesses. There are some expansions there. And most of all, it adds changes to enforcement, and that stayed. So those were the basics of the bill right there, and those things stayed. So the changes are very small. They take away any language that looks like it was new as far as the fees go, and just makes it so that it's very apparent there is no new language. And I think one of the most important things that we can say is this bill does not have a fiscal. Is there anything else I can clarify?
All right. One other thing is I know Senator Boquist had some issues regarding how this was being played out. I'm assuming he is in agreement with the Dash 2s.
My understanding is that he is in agreement with the Dash 2s. His primary concern had to do with that military exemption.
Correct. All right. Any
other has seen the language.
All right. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, no questions, but and I'm not saying that what was just stated is not right, but it's a 21-page amendment. It would be nice to be able to take time to do side-by-side comparisons.
All right, that's fine with me. So what we're going to do on Senate Bill 69, we now have the explanation of the Dash 2s. You want to hold and do that tomorrow?
If we could.
All right, so we will hold over and carry over Senate Bill 69 until tomorrow, April 21st. Thank you, ladies. All right, so what we're going to do here at this point, we're going to regroup because we have more things to do, and I'm not going to keep you all beyond what we need to do in the sense of just making sure everything's on the record. So with that said, let's go ahead and go through a couple of things here. All right. So regarding what I have left on the agenda, and I'm going to come back and go over the first part of the agenda, but I'm going to continue where we've left off. We've just carried over Senate Bill 69 until tomorrow, April 21st. We will be carrying over the remainder bills on page 3 of 4 as well as 4 of 4 until tomorrow, April 21st. And for clarity, those bills include Senate Bill 376, Senate Bill 382, Senate Bill 401, Senate Bill 406, Senate Bill 414, Senate Bill 415, Senate Bill 424, Senate Bill 504, Senate Bill 516, Senate Bill 524, Senate Bill 761, Senate Bill 763. All right, so all those bills that I just said will be carried over until tomorrow, April 21st. Now what we need to do is go back up to the front, and we've already taken care of the bills that were on the public hearing. Remember, we are carrying over the five bills I've already mentioned, 393, 394, 432, 868, 875. All of those are carried over until tomorrow as well. We've carried over 369, we've carried over 395, we have moved 416. Now, there was a question as to what we did with that bill because someone thought maybe we were moving it to the floor. The motion that I heard was a do pass recommendation to the floor, but requesting the president to refer the bill to the Ways and Means because we weren't sure if we had a subsequent referral. Does anyone disagree with that's what we were voting on? Does anyone disagree with the...
That's what we did.
All right, so we're now on the record as to exactly what we did, and that's what we said we did, and that's what we meant to do, and that's it on 416. All right, 420 is being carried over until tomorrow, the 21st. 678 carried over till tomorrow. 729, 730, 961, 963. Now, we did not take up the next two bills. I'm going to be carrying over those two bills. That's Senate Bill 608 as well as 819, 819. Both of those will be carried over until tomorrow as well. That is the 21st of April. We've already carried over, but continue to carry over Senate Bill 186, 346, 378, 408. Dropping down on page 3, 783, 926, 934. And as I said, lastly, we've carried over 69 plus the remainder, as we've already gone through just before going over the front of the agenda. All right. Anything else, ladies, that we haven't covered that you think we need to do? All right. Thank you very much. So, folks, we are scheduled to start tomorrow at 7:30. I will look at this with councils, and we'll decide on whether we need to start at 7:30, but plan on being here at 7:30. And I think we will because... Okay, so that's the plan, 7:30. Thank you very much. We're adjourned until tomorrow. Well, this is pre-time, so it's not overtime.